What I want to talk about for the rest of the time is various scientific fundamentals. And you can see that I have a slideshow here. This is not with the lecture slideshows. It's not on the same page on the site. If you go to the Hoffman site, which is this magenta one that we've already talked about, notice there's a link for current term lecture recordings. That's where the live performance lectures recordings will be. Of course, I haven't linked them yet because I'm still making them. But this also will be a link later. The scientific fundamentals slideshow will be a link to what I'm showing you here today. All the other lecture slideshows are on their own page. All right, let's start this off by distinguishing between quantities and units. Both of these things are important to science. And we wouldn't bother having separate words for these things if they were the same thing. So they are different from each other. Does anyone want to give a definition of either one of these? Do you know what a quantity is? I'm trying to encourage participation. This doesn't have to be a perfect definition. But silence implies to me that none of you has any idea what a quantity is. Yeah, a quantity is an amount of something. It's a little bit more specific than that. I like to give it as a practical definition. A quantity is basically anything that can be measured. And if you think of it that way, it should be obvious that there's a hell of a lot of quantities, right, in the universe, because there's a lot of different things you can measure. So it's more than just how big something is, for instance. That's an example of a quantity, but anything that can be measured is a quantity. How is that different, though, from a unit? Yes, by a way of measuring, I'm going to refine what your words and say that a unit is a predefined increment in which you measure a certain quantity. Now, that's not all that helpful a definition either. It's much more helpful to just think about this with examples. So, who wants to give me an example of a quantity? There's no limit to the number of quantities, so this should not be too troublesome a question. Yeah. Yeah, and that is a specific example of a more general quantity called number of particles. The number of something, that's a quantity. Okay? Now, who wants to give me an example of a corresponding unit? Because for any given quantity, there's at least one, and usually more than one choice of units that you can measure that quantity with or in. What's an example of a unit if your quantity is number of items?
Usually the item itself.
Well, the item itself is an object.
The count of the item.
Yeah, you could do it as ones, like six. Six units, right? Six ones. Or you can do it in tens, millions. Or you could do it in moles. A mole is a unit. A mole is Avogadro's number, which is 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd power, and that's it. It's just a number, like dozen is a number. If I say a dozen, you don't have no idea what objects I'm talking about, right? You just know how many. So it's just a number, like 10 is. This is a huge number, though, but that's what a mole is. Anyway, that's not actually the easiest example to understand the difference between units and quantities, though. So let's think of another quantity besides number of things. What's another quantity?
Yeah.
Well, that's an object again. What is it that you're measuring about? There's a lot of different quantities that you can measure about a football field.
The distance of a football field.
Distance is an example of a quantity. Okay? And what are some corresponding units that you can use for distance?
Feet,
yard,
mile,
rod, meter. There's all kinds of choices, right? But each unit is a predefined, has its own definition that you use to measure that corresponding quantity in. See the difference? Now I ask this, and everyone says, yes, I see the difference. But then when it comes to the quiz, I see otherwise. So don't say you understand the difference between a quantity and a unit unless you actually do understand. I'll ask again, do you truly understand? All right. Then let's go a little bit more specific, because these next words I'm going to give you apply to both quantities and units. There are what are called fundamental quantities, which are separate from what are called derived quantities. Fundamental and derived are the two major categories of quantities. And correspondingly, there are fundamental and derived units. We'll talk about the units in a minute, but what is the difference between a fundamental quantity and a derived quantity? Well, they're both quantities, obviously. But fundamental means standing on its own. And hopefully you know enough about chemistry for this analogy to hold. We're talking a little bit upstairs about the fact that molecules are made out of atoms. Atoms are more fundamental than molecules, because molecules are built out of atoms. Similarly, a derived quantity is not its own standalone thing. It's like a molecule in the sense that a derived quantity is made out of at least two fundamental quantities. Now I say at least two fundamental quantities, they don't have to be different fundamental quantities. It could be two of the same. Think of an oxygen molecule. An oxygen molecule, O2, is made out of two identical oxygen atoms. But the molecule is derived in that sense because it's made out of simpler things. All right? Or a water molecule is made out of not only multiple atoms, but multiple different kinds of atoms, hydrogen and oxygen. As long as it's two, though, whether they're different types or not, two or more quantities making up another quantity, that other quantity is derived for that reason. Only fundamental quantities stand on their own, like atoms do. And although there's no limit to the number of overall quantities, anything that you could measure, there is, perhaps surprisingly to you, a tiny number of fundamental quantities in the universe. Only five or so that matter to us in this biology course. I forget exactly how many fundamental quantities are recognized, like 9 or 11, something like that. But it's surprisingly few. And then there's millions of overall quantities. Similarly, in chemistry, there are millions of different chemicals that have already been produced, different from each other, even though they're using only roughly 100 types of atoms in the universe. Okay, so you see the difference between a fundamental and a derived quantity. Well, any given quantity has corresponding to it some number of units that you can use to express that quantity, right? If a quantity is fundamental, then any unit you choose that's a valid unit for that quantity will be a fundamental unit as well. Fundamental units correspond to fundamental quantities. And similarly, if the quantity, whatever it is derived, then any choice of units that you make for that will also be derived units. Helps once again to think of some examples. So, does anyone have an idea of an example for a fundamental quantity? Something that you can measure, but that stands on its own. It's not made up of other quantities. Water's not a quantity, it's a substance. A quantity is something that you are measuring about something. Did you say depth? Depth is one of several synonyms for distance. For instance, we talk about height, width, and depth. Those really are all distances. Okay? So that we use different words for them, but they really are all distances. They're just in different directions. But you're right that distance is a fundamental quantity. It's not made out of other things. It stands on its own. Now, what is an example of a derived quantity that's at least partially made up of distance? Just like a water molecule is partially made up of hydrogen atoms, which are, the hydrogen atoms would be the fundamental, the molecule is derived. Well, what is an example of a quantity that has distance in it as part of it?
Velocity
is a derived quantity that's made up of distance and other things, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Velocity is made up of distance and time, that's speed, plus direction, because velocity is a vector. But do you see why that makes it derived? Okay, so you have choice, as usual, if you're talking about velocity, you have a choice of units. But because velocity as the quantity is derived, because it's made up of other quantities, any unit you choose for velocity will be derived units, whether it's meters per second, light years per minute, or whatever. Right, those will all be derived units because they're describing a derived quantity.
Would acceleration also count toward a derived quantity?
Yes, acceleration. You know, if you write down the units, acceleration would be distance per time, or distance per time squared. So this would be like a molecule made up of three atoms. It's a good example because time is the same one, but there's two of them. So time squared, which is a unit, just by itself, time squared, that's derived. Even though it's using only one kind of unit, there's two of them. So it's derived. And speaking of that, time squared doesn't make much sense to you, probably. But what about area as a quantity? It is not fundamental, it's derived. Because what is area? Distance times distance, right? There's two distances in there. They're the same as each other, they're the same quantity, but that's what I meant by using an oxygen molecule as an example. Even though it's oxygen in both cases, there's two of them. That's more than one, so it's derived. Yeah. Yes, mass is fundamental. Time is fundamental. I'm surprised no one came up with time because it's fundamental. But there aren't all that many. Okay, the vast majority of quantities are derived. Let's look at some important quantities. Important for this course. All quantities are important to someone. Time is number one on here, and I just told you that that is fundamental. It's not made up of other things. But as usual, you have all kinds of choices for units, right? Day, year, minute, blah, blah, blah. Well, a major theme today, it has to do with units, because there are not only multiple choices of units, but there's multiple choices of systems of units to use. And there's been all kinds of systems over the ages. We're almost to the point of using only one system of units, which is the metric system. Embarrassingly, there are two holdouts in the world, and the United States is one of them. United States and Myanmar are the two countries who refuse to officially adopt the metric system. So we are still using what I like to call the silly system, the one you grew up with, that you probably don't even know, even though you spent your whole life with it. You don't know completely. The metric system, on the other hand, is very easy to learn. We're going to learn it today. You can learn it pretty thoroughly in 15 minutes, whereas a lifetime isn't enough to know the silly system. But despite the United States and being a holdout here, even within the United States, scientists, like all scientists in the whole world, use the metric system. And that's why it's so important to this course. But it was 49 years ago when I was in fifth grade. And one of the days in that fifth grade year, I remember the teacher saying, "Today we're going to learn the metric system. And you need to pay attention because pretty soon that's all we'll be using." Well, it's five decades later, we're still not close to adopting it, which is just ridiculous because it is truly a silly system. Our system, not the metric system. But anyway, time is kind of an exception because the metric system is the reason it's so easy, it's all based on powers of 10. It's a decimal system, in other words. So all the math is easy because of that. Except time. Time is the only unit in the metric system, the only quantity in the metric system that has units that are not decimal. And it's the only set of units that apply to both the silly system and the metric system. In other words, we can call it metric time. But a minute in the metric system is the same as a minute in the silly system. Same with seconds and hours. Okay. Mass. We mentioned this a little bit ago. What is mass, though? It's a quantity, but what is mass? Well, when you say amount of molecules, that implies number of molecules, which is not the mass. It's the amount of material. It's not the amount of atoms. It's the amount of material, yes.
Okay.
The amount of material that an object possesses. All right? Now, speaking of not knowing your own silly system, what are the units of mass in the silly system?
Weight.
Weight is not a unit. Weight is a quantity. Remember, you guys promised me that you understood the difference between quantity and units. Weight is not a unit. It is a quantity. So that's not the units for mass. What are?
Pounds.
No. Pounds are the units in the silly system for weight. which is a different quantity compared to mass. Let's pause there for a second. Mass is the amount of stuff that something is made out of, right? Weight is an example of a force. There's forces other than weights, but all weights are forces. Weight is specifically force due to gravity, which is why there will be a force, such a force that we call a weight, only if you're in a gravitational field, right? So if you weigh yourself here on Earth, you'll have a certain weight. But if you go into outer space, you will be weightless. Your weight changes to zero, but you're made out of exactly the same stuff, right? You still have that stuff. You still have the same mass, because mass does not depend on gravity. Weight does. So now back to my question. What is your own unit of mass? The Silly System.
I don't know.
It is the slug. Do you remember learning that?
No
one does. American engineers used to actually use it. Now they are, since they're scientists, they use the metric unit of mass, which is what?
Grams.
The gram, right. Gram is not weight. This leads me to an example of just one thing that pisses me off in life. It's not something that I really lose sleep over, but it pisses me off nonetheless. You buy a bathroom scale in just about anywhere else in the world who has enough sense to use the metric system, and there will be only one row of numbers. But not bathroom scales that are destined for the United States, no matter where they're made. Right? You've looked at bathroom scales. You know there's two rows of numbers, right? What are the big numbers? What are those units? Those are pounds. First of all, you recognize that a pound is a unit, not a quantity, right? It is a unit that corresponds to what quantity?
Force
that we specifically call weight. Yes. Okay. That's appropriate, because what do you do when you step on that to measure your weight? You compress springs that turn the dial, right? In other words, you're using your force due to gravity, your weight, to register on the instrument. You're directly measuring your weight, and therefore the output should be a weight. Pounds are weight, units of weight. But what's the smaller row of numbers above that? Kilograms, which are not units of weight. They are units of mass. Now, the reason that companies get away with this is because they make the reasonable assumption that you are going to use this bathroom scale only on the surface of the Earth. So they are assuming what gravity is, because it doesn't change if you stay here. But do the thought experiment of taking that bathroom scale to the moon. Your mass is going to be identical on the moon as it compared to here. But if you step on that scale, it's going to tell you that you're only roughly 1/6 of the weight. Well, the weight units will be correct. But it'll also say you're only 1/6 as massive as you are, because the kilograms will be 1/6. And that's wrong. You have the same mass, right? They are totally separate quantities. By the way, speaking of weight, is it fundamental or derived?
I would
say
derived.
Why?
Because gravity is based on your height.
It's based on what?
Your height and weight.
Your height and weight?
Well, the height and pounds. So, I mean, in another word, the way that insurance is charge you, they base it off of that. They base it off that height.
Yes, but weight itself as a measurement, if you, go ahead.
Is it derived because it uses force?
It's derived because it is a force, and all forces are derived. And there's a famous genius who told us about this. Who am I talking about? F equals what? According to Newton. Mass times acceleration. This tells you that force must be derived because it's made up of mass and acceleration, which are two quantities. And as a matter of fact, just acceleration by itself is already derived because it includes time, two times, and distance. Okay, so all forces are derived, and therefore weight, since it is a force, is derived. Okay. By the way, still complaining about this pet peeve of the bathroom scales. The kilograms is the wrong unit to use, right? Because it's not weight, it's mass. What should the unit be? What is the metric unit that should be used on bathroom scales?
What?
No, that's not metric. That's the silly system. And it's not. It's also not weight. Slug is the silly system unit for mass. We don't want a bathroom scale to give us mass. We want to give it weight. So pounds is correct. That's the silly system for weight. What is the metric unit for weight? Yeah. No. Well, there's two different. There's metric tons as well.
Yeah.
In his honor, we named the unit, the metric unit for weight, the Newton. So the smaller numbers on a United States bathroom scale should be newtons, not kilograms. All right. Length, we've already said. Well, length, I said distance. Length is another word for distance. So height, width, depth, length, distance, they all mean the same thing. And they're all fundamental. So any unit you choose that's a proper unit of distance is also fundamental. In inches, a meter is, and so on. By the way, and just to point out some of the silliness, you have all kinds of familiar choices for units of distance in the silly system, right? Which are, what are some examples? Those are quantities. Those aren't units. Inches is one in the silly system.
Feet.
Yards.
Miles.
Furlongs, rods.
I didn't know rods were one of them.
There's all kinds of them. And just quickly tell me how many inches there are in a mile in your silly system. I mean, you can do that, but most of you can't do it in your head, right? But if I ask you to tell me how many centimeters there are in a kilometer, which is kind of the same scale, it's an easy mental exercise. That's why the metric system is preferred. One of the reasons. All right. Force, we've already talked about. Temperature. Well, first of all, what is it? A lot of people confuse weight and mass that we've already talked about. Similarly, a lot of people confuse temperature and heat, which are not the same thing. Heat is an example of an intensive property. I'm sorry, extensive. Whereas temperature is an intensive property. An extensive property is one for which the extent, meaning how much stuff you have, matters. Heat is like that. Temperature, it doesn't matter how much you have. Because it's an average. Okay, so the heat is, or thermal energy, you defined this way, is the amount of, it's the energy of motion of particles. Well, the more particles you have, in other words, the bigger your sample size, your sample is, the more heat is in that sample. Temperature, on the other hand, is proportional to the, or in other words, it's kind of an indirect measurement of the average speed of the particles in that sample. So just like you would calculate any average, you would measure individually the speed of each individual particle, right? And then you divide by the number of particles. That's why how many particles you have doesn't matter, because you're dividing them out. So it's not saying that any given particle is moving that speed. It's saying the average of all the particle speeds is that. Okay, now a real-world example of the difference between extensive and intensive, specifically heat and temperature, is a swimming pool versus a glass of water. If you have a swimming pool, there's a hell of a lot more water in a swimming pool than a glass of water. So there's a lot more particles, and therefore a lot more motion of those particles overall. In other words, a swimming pool contains a lot more heat than a glass of water does. Well, if you take a sample from that pool with an empty glass and you measure the temperature immediately before it can change, that glass of water will have exactly the same temperature as the overall pool does, because the average is the same. But the glass of water has a lot less heat in it because it has a lot less matter, a lot less mass. You see the difference? Okay, well, temperature has many choices of units still. There have been many systems of temperature units, but nowadays there's really only three that are still hanging on. In the Silly system, we use the Fahrenheit scale, for which the unit is the degree Fahrenheit, right? Written like that. It is a scale, a temperature scale, like all temperature scales are, made up of units. Each unit, of course, is the same size as any other units because they're standardized units. So you can think of it as having tick marks. Well, the metric system has two scales of temperature, both of which are used. Yeah.
Celsius and Kelvin?
Yes. The Celsius, which used to be called centigrade, a word that actually I prefer because it makes more sense, but anyway, centigrade and Celsius are the same thing. Those units are also called degrees. But they're not just degrees, just like the Fahrenheit ones are. The Fahrenheit ones are called degrees Fahrenheit. The centigrade ones or Celsius ones are degrees centigrade. So in other words, the F and the C are necessary there. You don't use just a degree symbol. The reason that the centigrade scale was so named, centigrade means 100 divisions. Cent means 100, which is why a hundredth of a dollar is a cent. There are 100 tick marks between two important values, which this scale is based on water. The boiling of water on the Celsius scale occurs at 100 degrees centigrade. Freezing of water is defined as 0 centigrade. And therefore, between freezing and boiling of water, you have 100 gradations centigrade. Of course, water doesn't care about any specific scale. It'll still freeze or boil at any other scale. What are the corresponding values in the Fahrenheit? What about freezing? 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And boiling? No, 212. Now notice that there's 180 gradations between 32 and 212. And this is why if you convert between centigrade and Fahrenheit in either direction, it involves a 1.8 factor. 180 per 100 is 180 divided by 100 is 1.8. In other words, it takes 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit to equal the same temperature change as 1 degree centigrade. Okay. The zero that's on Fahrenheit is well below the freezing of water, it's exactly at the freezing of water for centigrade, but zero in either of these two scales is really just arbitrarily chosen. That's why you have the Kelvin scale in addition to this, which is also called the absolute temperature scale. And that's because the zero in the Kelvin scale is truly zero. What did I just say is temperature? The average speed of the motion of the particles. Right. Well, at zero centigrade, they're moving slower than they are at 100 centigrade, but they're still moving. So zero centigrade does not mean no temperature, no speed of particles. On the other hand, zero on the Kelvin scale is called absolute zero because it really means no movement of particles at all. And therefore, the temperature is truly zero. You can't get below it. Understand the difference there? Okay. Well, the nice thing about conversion between these two metric systems, Celsius or centigrade and Kelvin, is that they have units that are identical in size. They're just offset from each other on the scales. So zero is way down here. Zero in centigrade is negative 273.15 degrees centigrade. That's zero on the Kelvin scale. Now, importantly, even though the Kelvin units are the same exact size as a centigrade or Celsius unit, the Kelvin units are not called degrees, and you should never use the degree symbol for them. The units of Kelvin temperature are themselves called Kelvins, just by itself, not degrees Kelvin. And so that's why I wrote K, capital K here, not degree K. All right? So 273.15 Kelvins is where water freezes, because it's the same as zero centigrade. But since they're the same size, that means as you go up one Kelvin, it's the same as going up one centigrade degree. Everyone good on that? All right. And number of particles we started out with. I've never had that be the first example, by the way, though, so I like that you brought that up. But number of particles is a fundamental quantity. It's not made up of other things. There's all kinds of things we can count. And so that's important for various reasons. But in chemistry, which includes biology, sometimes the things we count are very tiny, like atoms or molecules. And you could count them in ones, but even, you know, an atom is so tiny that it takes trillions just before you start seeing a speck of stuff. So if you have enough atoms to actually work with, and you want to say how many there are, and you're counting them by ones, you have to use an inconveniently huge number. Well, no, a mole is conveniently. If you were saying that in ones rather than, you know, it's like the difference between counting by ones or counting by dozens. If you're counting something that's so small that you'll have just a shitload of them, then you don't want to have to write that huge number out over and over. That's why we invented a huge number to count small things in, and that's what the mole is. So, oh, I erased it now, but that's Avogadro's number is one mole. But as I said, a mole is simply the number. It tells you nothing about what you're counting. You could have a mole of planets, a mole of cars, a mole of atoms, or so on. But there's a correspondence between the mole and the periodic table that we'll be talking much more about in lecture. On this version, the red numbers below the element symbols are examples of what are called atomic mass. And there's two ways that you can think about atomic mass. For instance, for lithium, 6.941. You can think of that about that as having units of grams per mole, or you can think about it as having units of mass per atom. In other words, one single lithium atom has a mass of 6.941 atomic mass units. That's not so practical if you're actually working with the stuff, because one atom is, you can't just deal with that in a lab. But the alternative way of thinking about it in terms of grams per mole is that you can't count individual lithium atoms, but if you measure out enough lithium so that you can have, so that you have 6.941 grams of that, that's the mass of the overall sample, then the number of lithium atoms that you have is 6.941 moles. In other words, 6.941 times 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd power. And that's not all that much. 6 grams of lithium you can hold in your hand. Well, you don't want to do that because lithium is dangerous. But you could hold it in a gloved hand, and the number of atoms in there is enormous. Because when you multiply, it's almost 7 by Avogadro's number, 10 to the 23rd power, well, that's a bit huge number. Trillions of trillions. Okay, anyway, that's why we have the mole. For small particles, it's much more convenient. Now we can get to the actual learning of the metric system part of the presentation. It's metric system, as I said before, is a decimal system. It's based on 10, except for time. All the other quantities, though, have units based on 10. And what you have in the table here is a bunch of prefaces, or prefixes, which is why they all end in a dash. None of these words you would use by themselves. It's a prefix. You have to add that to the beginning of some other word. Well, the word that you would add these prefixes to depends on what you are measuring. The word that you add the prefix to is the quantity that you're dealing with. And so it depends on what quantity you're dealing with as to what units you have, right? If the quantity is distance, then the metric unit of distance should be used, which is the meter. Okay, that's a base unit. What I mean by base unit is that when you use meter, it doesn't have any prefix on it. In the table, the base unit is represented by this middle row. No prefix is used. That's why there's a dash here. Now, you can measure, and meter, by the way, is a unit of distance, right? So the quantity is distance. The unit is meter, because we're metric. And any given distance that you measure could be expressed in meters, including the distance from here to Jupiter. But once again, it would be inconvenient to use meters because it would result in a huge number of meters, right? Which is inconvenient to write down. That's why the metric system uses these prefaces, which are multipliers. So if the meter is a suitable size unit for your measurement, fine. You don't use it. You use that as the unit and nothing else. But if it's a bigger distance and you want to make bigger units to make it more convenient, you can go up a step in the table. And notice up one from the base results in kilo as a prefix. Kilo simply means 1,000 of, or 1,000 times 1,000. Notice that the base is represented by 10 to the 0 power, which is 1, right? Kilo is represented by 10 to the 3rd power, 1,000. So kilo you don't use by itself, but you could use kilometer. Kilometer is a unit also of distance, but it's 10 times as big as a meter. I mean, 1,000 times as big as a meter. Which is appropriate for some cases, right? Well, each time you go up one step in this table to the prefix above it, you're making that next step 10 to the third power or 1,000 times as big as the one below it. So we're jumping by three orders of magnitude. An order of magnitude in science refers to 1 power of 10. So 10 is one order of magnitude bigger than 1. 100 is two orders of magnitude bigger than 1. You see that? Because 100 is 10 squared. So the order of magnitude is represented by the exponent of 10. Okay, so we're making three orders of magnitude jump for each of these table rows. If you look at these words above the base, you'll notice that all of these, with one exception, begin with a capital letter. Mega means 10 to the 6th, so there's a million base units in one mega unit. A million meters in one megameter. A million liters in one megaliter. And so on. Okay? Well, the capital letter was a convention, meaning we agreed on doing that, as a mnemonic reminder that we're making things bigger. Capital letter means it's bigger than the base. Now, it would be consistent if we had also used a capital letter for kilo, because it's bigger than the base as well. Why don't we use a capital K? Well, these are the actual spelled out prefixes. Each prefix has a symbol. For mega, it's capital M. For kilo, it's K. Why is it not capital K? Yeah. Because K is already spoken for. It means kelvins. Correct. That's the only reason. All the ones below the base are smaller than the base. So the first step down in this table is milli, which means 1/1,000th of. It's smaller than the base unit. So 1 millimeter is only 1/1,000th as big as 1 meter. But a backwards way of saying that is that it takes 1,000 millimeters to make up 1 meter. Now, you can lose track of this when you're doing the kinds of problems I'm getting to eventually. Hopefully this will help to think about this in common sense terms. If you have something that you're measuring, the thing you're measuring does not change, right? No matter what you're measuring, no matter what you're choosing your units in, the amount that's there is there. Well, if I'm choosing a small unit to measure that thing in, my answer is going to be a big number, right? Compared to if I use big units to measure it in. There's not going to be as many of those big units. This corresponds to an old joke about the guy that goes into the pizzeria and asks for a pizza. And the baker asks him whether he wants it cut into 6 slices or 8. And he says, 8, because I'm really hungry today. Well, he's not getting any more pizza, right? He's just using smaller units, and therefore he has a bigger number of those to make up the whole. So the smaller the units, the bigger the number is going to be for any given measurement. That's the point. Okay, but all of these make it smaller. Milli is 1/1,000th. Three steps or 3 powers of 10 below that is 10^-6, as opposed to 10^-3. So a micro is 1,000,000th. Of the base, but notice that a micro is 1,000th of a milli, which itself is 1,000th of the base. So it's 1,000th of a thousandth, which is 1,000,000th, and so on. Since we're skipping by 3 orders of magnitude in each of these rows, that means the difference between the bottom and the top is enormous. It's 48 orders of magnitude between Yocto and Yotta. In other words, there's a unit, no matter what you're measuring, cosmic level things or tiny subatomic particles, there is a unit that's appropriate within this list because it's such a big range. It's way more of a range that's necessary for things in biology, by the way. These ones at the top are way too huge to even think about biologically. And the ones on the bottom are way too small, which is why you don't have to know for this course this entire table, even though I've included it there. But in the next page, I have another table, which is almost the same table with a couple exceptions. One is that you see the red ones. Those you don't have to bother memorizing. Too big or too small for biology. You have to know all the others, though, white and yellow. Well, all these white ones were here in the previous table that I just showed you. The yellow ones are new. And notice that the yellow ones are only on either side of the base. That's because it gives you even more choices of units right around the base. It's not necessarily... It's too rough to jump three orders of magnitude from meter to kilometer sometimes. Sometimes you're measuring something that is, the base itself is a little too small, but kilo is a little too big. So right around the base, on either side, we go by one order of magnitude steps instead of three order of magnitude steps. 10 times bigger than the base is deca with a K. So 1 deciliter is 10 liters. Okay, same as 10 liters. 100 times, which is 2 orders of magnitude bigger than the base, is hecto. A hecto-minute is 100 minutes. Okay? And then one more step, and you're at kilo that we've already talked about. And then from there, it goes by threes. Everyone clear on that? Similarly for downward. Deci, be careful with deci and deca. Deci is 1/10 of the base. So it takes 10 deciliters to equal 1 liter. Centi, 1/100th. Like the cent compared to the dollar. It's 1/100th of a dollar. Yeah.
Why are they lowercase and uppercase?
Because the lowercase tells you these are smaller than the base.
Oh, no, I mean like above the
smartest. Because these also had conflicting definitions already. Same reason as for kilo. Yeah, to be completely consistent, they should all be capital. They just couldn't be because of existing units that were already in place. Okay, so those you need to memorize. But just remember, you don't use any of these things in isolation. You have to add these to whatever the unit's name is for the base corresponding to the quantity you're measuring. If it's time, it would be seconds. If it's mass, it would be grams. If it's volume, it would be liters, and so on. All right. Next major topic is something that's called dimensional analysis. And this is something that students do their best to avoid for whatever reason, unless you force them to do it, which I'm going to do. So use that as a hint. I never say what the upcoming quiz is, but I pretty much just told you that it will include a dimensional analysis problem. Dimensional analysis gets its name because another name for a unit is a dimension. And dimensional analysis is useful for a lot of different reasons, but we're only going to focus on one. We're going to focus on only one use of dimensional analysis, which is to use it for conversion problems. All right? And we have an example conversion problem right here. So you see, how many millimeters are in 150 miles? So this is not only a conversion problem, but it converts from silly system or metric system to silly system. Oh no. No, you're starting out in silly system, you're going to metric. Doesn't have to be the case. You can convert from metric to metric or from silly to silly, but this one is between the two systems. Before I forget, notice the decimal point that's after 150. That's important. I'll explain why in a minute, but it's there intentionally. This wouldn't be correct without it. Anyway, it says, use dimensional analysis to find out. Well, if you use dimensional analysis for a conversion problem, what it really amounts to is serial multiplication, meaning multiplication of one thing after another in a series. Practically, what you're doing in this example is re-expressing the same distance that you started with in different units, right? Now, this is important because the distance is not changing in this process, right? You have the same distance at the end that you had to start with. All that's changing is the unit you're using to express that distance. Understand? The reason that's important is for mathematical reasons. I just said that dimensional analysis is serial multiplication. So you're going to take that original distance and you're going to multiply it by several things, and that's going to give you the same distance because the distance doesn't change, right? The quantity is the same. Well, think about how math works. If you're going to multiply something over and over with other numbers, what is the only way that you can get the same answer after multiplying? What has to be true of those things that you're multiplying by? They have to be one, the multiplicative identity. One is the only number that you can multiply something by and get the same answer, right? So, we have a bunch of factors here. Back to math. What is a factor? Well, a factor is something that is multiplied by something, as opposed to an addend. 3 plus 4, 3 and 4 are addends because you add them together. 3 times 4, 3 and 4 are factors because you multiply factors together. Okay. Well, every one of these things in parentheses is by itself a factor because they're all being multiplied together. There's two categories of factors here. The first one is simply what you're given in the problem, which in this case is the distance expressed in miles. So this first factor is just what's given from the problem, 150 point miles. All the rest of these factors are examples of conversion factors. And a conversion factor mathematically is just a different representation of one. It has to be, because otherwise, if you multiply this original distance by anything other than one, you would be changing the distance, right? The distance is not changing. Therefore, you must be multiplying by one in order for it not to change. Well, if each one of these conversion factors is also a fraction. If a fraction in general is equal to one, what can you tell me about the fraction? If you know nothing else about the fraction other than it's equal to one, what can you tell me about it? Exactly. The numerator equals the denominator, and neither of them is zero. It can be any other number besides zero. As long as the numerator and the denominator are the same, then the whole fraction equals one, right? 14 fourteenths, one mole over one mole, whatever. Well, in every one of these conversion factors, the numerator equals the denominator. That's why the fraction equals 1, and that's why when you multiply it by the original value, you're not changing that original value. You keep the distance the same. What's different about these fractions that are representations of 1 is that the numerator has different units that it's using compared to the denominator. But 1,760 yards is the same as 1 mile. Therefore, the whole thing equals 1. You see that? Okay. Well, using dimensional analysis then to do a conversion factor is really just systematic. You do the same technique always. You start with what the problem gives you. In this case, it's 150 miles. Now, I could write that down as just 150 miles. It would be correct. But since I realize that all these conversion factors are going to be fractions, I simply make the given a fraction for consistency's sake. And you can make anything a fraction by dividing it by 1. That's the only reason I did that. It's just a housekeeping thing. Okay. Now, let me do this side by side, one step at a time, write it out. So I'm starting with... Damn, that red hangs on. I'm starting with 150... point miles. And miles is MI, not M. M is meters. All right, I'm making that a fraction. Here's the way I want you to think about the process. You start with whatever you're given. That can't be your answer because the question's asking you to express it in some other units, right? If I stop right now, I'm in units of miles. So I know I must not be done. My answer can't have miles, or I'm sorry. Oh yeah, my answer can't have miles in it because the question's asking for millimeters. Therefore, I have to eliminate the miles units. Well, with fractions, how do you eliminate? By putting it in the opposite place that it is at the moment, right? Right now it's in a numerator. To cancel it, it needs to be in a denominator. So don't think about any numbers yet. Just almost thoughtlessly do this process. You put down what you're given, along with its unit. And you immediately know, since it's on the top, you need to put miles in the bottom so that those will cancel. Now you can choose any other unit of distance you want. Your goal, in this case, is millimeters. And if you knew the appropriate conversion factor numbers, you could go from miles to millimeters and be done in one step. But most people don't have that memorized. So instead, we're going to have to rely on your silly system knowledge. If you know how many any other units there are in a mile. For instance, you could use feet. How many feet are in a mile? You've been living with this for 20 years. 5,280. You could do it that way. I chose 1,760 yards. It's just another one that I have memorized from childhood. But let's do it as yards, since that's what it is. Okay, you write down the units first before you fill in any numbers. And you do that, and this is what students don't want to do. They don't want to bother writing any units because they know they're just going to punch it into a calculator without any units. But by systematically writing down the units, you're making sure you're setting it up properly. Because if you have one of these upside down, your answer will be meaningless and worth a zero. So the miles cancel here. But let's fill in the numbers. This goes back to this pizza joke. You have two units within this conversion factor. Therefore, one of them is bigger than the other. The bigger unit is always going to feature the smaller number if they're going to equal each other, right? So the bigger number always goes with the smaller unit and vice versa. In this case, 1 mile, since it's the bigger one, is equal to 1,760 yards. And that's why this whole thing equals 1. Now, if you stop there, your answer would be in yard. That's why you know you're not done. So you just keep doing this process. You need to get rid of yards now, so you put those down there so they'll cancel. You can choose anything once again. But I didn't have memorized yards to millimeters, so I had to stay in the filling system for another round. I'm going from feet, yards to feet. Yards is bigger, so it has a smaller number associated with it. 1 yard, 3 feet. Okay? Get rid of the feet. Go to inches. 1 bigger foot is 12 smaller inches. Now here's an important one. I intentionally got myself to inches because when you're working with distances and going between silly and metric, you can take advantage of a special conversion factor. It's special because it's not an approximation. It is exact. There are exactly 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. And by exact, I mean that's not rounded. I wrote it as 2.54, but you could write it as 2.54 and as many zeros as you want because it's exactly equal to 1 centimeter. All right, that's going to be important when we talk about significant figures. But since it's exact, we can use it, and that allows us to make the jump from silly to metric. All right? Doing that, if we were to stop there, we would be in centimeters. So we know we're now in the metric system, but we're not done because the question's asking for millimeters. Once you have used the metric system for a while, you can easily mentally make the conversion from centimeters to millimeters. In other words, from metric to some other place in the metric system. But I don't want you to do that if you're not used to the metric system yet, because you're going to confuse yourself when it comes to these prefixes that you've bothered to memorize once you do memorize them. Okay? The prefix, the values for the prefixes in the table, those are all based in comparison to the base, not to each other. So, if you're in the metric system but you're not where you need to be in the metric system yet, don't go directly to the destination. Instead, go from where you are, which in this case is centimeters, to the base, which would be meters. That way you can use your knowledge that centi means 1/100th of the base to fill in the numbers. Centimeters, 1/100th of a meter, that's smaller, so it gets the bigger number. There's 100 centimeters in 1 meter. Everyone following? And then once you're at the base, you can go from there to wherever the question wants you to get, which in this case is millimeters, mm. Then once again, you can use your knowledge of milli, meaning 1/1000th of the base. So there's 1,000 millimeters in the bigger meter. Okay? This is why you bother to write all these units, because if you've done it correctly, everything except what should be in the answer has canceled. The only units that haven't canceled are millimeters. That's the only units the question's asking for, so you've set it up properly. You won't know that if all you use is numbers. You could have flipped one of these upside down and it would be totally incorrect. So, resist the temptation not to use the units. This is not the end of the process, though. This is just a setup. It shows you that it's set up, but we have to actually calculate it now. And this is where you can get into trouble even with a calculator. A calculator can be used incorrectly. Now, in math, you have what's called the hierarchy of mathematical operations. What kinds of operations are done before others? Multiplication is higher than addition, for instance. But multiplication and division are equal in the hierarchy, and it therefore doesn't matter what order you do this in. For instance, you could think of it as 150 divided by 1 times 2.54 divided by 100 times 3, and so on. Now, it would be silly to do it randomly like that because you'd forget what you've entered into the calculator. But the point here is that you to properly use a calculator, you don't hit equals until you are done. Hit it once at the end when it's nothing but multiplication and division. And just work as from left to right, top to bottom. As long as the numerator is always times and each denominator is always divided by, you'll be fine. You just enter it as 100 and you don't have to bother with ones because they don't change it. So you'd enter this as 150 times 1760 times 3 times 12 times 2.54 times 1,000 divided by 100 and then hit equals. Anyone do that and get the same answer that's listed here? What? Yeah, well, this is what a calculator will tell you. Because the calculator has no idea about significant figures. It just simply does the math. So the calculator should spit this out. But that's not the answer for two reasons. One reason is that this number by itself can't possibly be the answer because it doesn't have any units. That number by itself is meaningless because without knowing what units it's in, it could be any distance at all, right? Well, the calculator is not going to give you any units. It's only going to give you a number. But the other reason it's incorrect is because this number has too many significant figures in it. We're not justified in using some of these numbers because it's too specific. Has too much resolution, more than we actually are allowed to use in this case. This is the notion of significant figures in science. And this is why I made a point of saying that this 2.54 is exact. Actually, all of these are exact. It's exactly 1,760 yards in a mile. So all of these have infinite number of significant figures, as many as you want to add. In other words, none of them constrain you as far as how many significant figures you have to use in your answer. But in a problem like this, your answer can't have more significant figures in it than whatever part of the problem had the least number of significant figures. These don't constrain you at all because they're all exact. This is an actual measurement. So it depends on the measurement instrument you used. So we know it, in this case, to three significant figures. That's why the decimal point is important. There's three significant figures in this, and therefore your answer, despite what the calculator tells you, has to be rounded to three significant figures. All right? Now, any non-zero number before you get to a zero is significant. All right? In a measurement, not this answer. So the first one is 2, of course. That's not a 0. So that's where you start counting. The 2, the 4, and the 1, those are significant because we are justified in using three significant figures from this. But this 4 is not significant. We don't know whether it's 4 or some other number, really. So we have to round our last justified significant figure appropriately using the one after it. 4 is less than 5, so we keep this as a 1. But all these others are still important placeholders. They just need to be 0 because we don't actually know them. So the answer is not 241. It's 241 million. Right? You could write that out as 241 000 000 000. There's a problem with that, though. And that's because this has trailing zeros on it. Trailing zeros are ambiguous. They can mean one thing or another, and you're not sure of which it actually means. Okay? Non-zero numbers are significant, so you know these three are significant. A trailing zero, a zero that comes after some numbers, might be significant, it might not. You can't tell by looking at it. So, this number has at least 3, but it could have 4, if this is significant. Could have 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9. That's why, well, there's 2 reasons we don't write numbers, big numbers like this in science. One reason is much more important than the other. Instead, we write in what's called scientific notation. Scientific notation is some number times 10 to some power. In this case, it's 10 to the 8th. Okay, so there's 2 reasons that we do this. One is, the less important reason is that it's just a lot more convenient than writing a hell of a lot of zeros after or before. Now, if you have a very large number, you're going to have, and you don't use scientific notation, you're going to have a lot of zeros you're going to write after it. If you have a tiny number without significant figure, you're going to have to write 0 point, many zeros, and then finally some number, some non-zero number. So it's just inconvenient. But that's not the real reason. The real reason for scientific notation is that it eliminates the ambiguity with respect to significant figures. Regardless of its zero or any other digit, any digit that comes before the times 10 in scientific notation is significant. So you can tell at a glance that this particular number has exactly 3 significant figures, because there's 3 figures here before the X. Okay, consider 1,000. In non-scientific or standard notation, you'd write it like this. I can't tell whether this has 1, 2, 3, or 4 significant figures as written. If it has 1, we can demonstrate that by writing it as 1 times 10 to the third. There's only 1 figure between the X, before the X, so it's 1 significant figure. Now, it looks exactly the same to the calculator as 1.0 times 10 to the third. But 1.0 times 10 to the third has 2 significant figures. You see the difference? And if it has all 4, then you'd write it as 1.000 times 10 to the third. All you have to do is look at this part and count digits to know how many significant figures you have. That's the important reason why we use scientific notation. Okay, so that's where you get the final answer, which is not only the proper magnitude, which is the numerical part, the size, 2.41 times 10 to the 8th, but you also have the units. Without the units, that's a wrong answer, even if it's in scientific notation. That's almost the last step. There is one step that you should never skip, but a lot of people do. And that's simply to ask yourself, does this answer make any sense? Okay, you're going from 150 miles. You kind of have a feel for how big that is, right? And you're going to express that in millimeters. Each millimeter is that big. What would you expect your answer to be as far as the number is concerned? Huge, right? Should be a hell of a lot of millimeters in 150 miles. Well, there is. 2.41 times 10 to the 8th. Right? 241 million. Makes sense. If it was times 10 to the negative 7th, because you set it up incorrectly, or because you didn't bother to put the units in, then that shouldn't pass the does it make sense test. So do that. Okay. Now I always ask at this point, do you think that you're going in next week going to be able to do one of these like I just did it? Everyone says yes. But this is a big reason for the first quiz having a low score, I think. No, that's I always forget to say this. If there is a conversion, you have to know how to get from metric to metric, because you have to memorize that whole system. But if there is a particular one that is necessary in a problem, like cups to liters or whatever, then I will give it to you. So then the next question is, do you want me to do one more example of this? Okay. Let's do another distance one. just so we don't change too much about the process, you can think about it easier, hopefully. Let's also do a one that goes between silly and metric, but in the opposite direction. For instance, I could ask 17.3 gigameters equals how many inches? Or let's say feet. Okay? Well, what is the very first step in this process? To put down what's given in the question, right? Which is what? 17.3, whoops, gigameters. Notice the capital G. And I'm going to make that a fraction like before, even though I don't have to. Now, what do you almost unthinkingly do? Put the gigameters in the bottom since they're in the top right now. You have to get rid of them. Because gigameters can't be in your answer. Only feet can be. Okay, you can go from gigameters to anything you want, including feet, but you probably don't have gigameters to feet memorized. You're in the metric system, right? Instead of trying, as a goal, since we're getting to the silly system, we want to eventually get to inches to take advantage of that special 2.54 centimeters per inch. But just like I didn't want you to go from one place in the metric to the final step in one, I don't want you to do that here. Instead, go from where you are to the base, which is meters. Which one's bigger? Gigameters is a hell of a lot bigger, right? So it's going to have a small number. One gigameter is how many meters? What does giga mean? It means what? 10 to the ninth.
Yeah.
Right. Three orders of magnitude is kilo. That's 1,000 times as big as the base. Three more orders of magnitude is mega. That's 1,000,000 times. Giga is 1,000,000,000 times. So you can write that as 1 followed by 9 zeros. I'm going to write it as 10 to the ninth. Just shorthand. The big number goes with the smaller unit. Now that you're at the base, you can go from there to where you want to be in the metric system, which in this case is centimeters, so you can take advantage of that inches to centimeters one. Is that clear? So we're going to get rid of meters, put centimeters on the top because we want to get there. There's 100 centimeters in 1 meter. We're done with the metric system now because if we stop now, we'd be in centimeters. We can get rid of centimeters and go to the silly system using that special one that I told you about. And it's don't think of it as 2.54 always in the top or always in the bottom. 2.54 always goes with centimeters. There's 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. We're almost done. We're in the silly system, but we need to be in feet. So we need to get rid of inches and go to feet, using the fact that 12 inches equals 1 foot. Now we can see we set it up properly because everything except feet cancels. We're not done, though. We have to multiply it, right? Now I'm not going to do this in my head, so someone punch in 17.3 times 10 to the ninth, either that or 1 followed by 9 zeros, times 100, divided by 2.54, divided by 12, equals. And while we're waiting on the answer, what do you expect the value to be in terms of size? We're going from gigameters to feet. We expect it to be a hell of a big number, yes. Billions of meters expressed in feet is going to be even more billions, right? Do you have an answer? Now, it's 6, 7, what?
6, 7, 5, 8.
Okay, so it's 5. Now, these don't constrain us, right? Because those are all exact. This has how many significant figures?
Three.
So the 7 needs to be rounded, either staying as 7, but since you said it's 5 is next, this becomes an 8. Times 10 to the what? 10th. That's still not done. What's missing? Feet. You have to have the unit. And it does follow the does it make sense test, right? This is a huge number, as it should be for gigameters. Okay, is that example make it better? It won't be good until you do some practice. So bother to do that practice if you want to score well on the quiz. Yeah. Not the decimal point. Just as a convention in scientific notation, you know, I could write 0.003 times 10 to the third. That's scientific notation, really, but it's not conventional scientific notation because we always want to have one non-zero number come first. And so we would write that as 3 because this only has one significant figure. These leading zeros are insignificant. 3 times 10 to the just 10. 10 to the first or just 10. You see that? If it were 0.32, then we would write that as 3.2 times 10 to the first. So the standard is to have, if you only have one significant figure, it's just one digit. But if it's more, it's a digit point the other digits. And then you adjust the exponent to make it correct. Yeah?
So
trailing zeros are ambiguous. The leading zeros are meaningless. Any zeros that come before the first non-zero don't mean anything. They're just placeholders. Okay. That's the last slide, but that's not the last of me yet. I'm getting close, though. And believe me, it's harder to do this than to sit and listen to me.
Wait, real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I understand how you got a lot of those numbers, but I'm confused on like the 2.54 centimeters, how you got that.
Because that's just a fact. That's a special conversion factor that is exact. It's not what I meant is that it's not approximately 2.54 centimeters in an inch. It is exactly. So it's worth memorizing, even though you don't have to memorize it for the quiz. If you ever need to go between metric and metric distance and silly distance, you can do it with centimeters and meters. I mean, centimeters and inches that way.
Gotcha.
So it doesn't mean anything more than 3 tablespoons per fluid ounce. That's just a fact. I think it's 3 tablespoons per fluid ounce, isn't it? Yeah, I think so. Anyway, the only other thing I want to talk about, I think, is a few more definitions. I want to distinguish between accuracy, precision, and resolution. You've probably heard all these terms before. Let's start with accuracy. Anyone want to give that a definition shot? What is accuracy? How close something is to the truth. Let me put it that way. In terms of measurements, accuracy is how close it is to the real value, whatever that real value is. Now, when you make real measurements with real instruments, there's always error associated. So any given instrument has has a certain accuracy associated with it. Any measurement does. A lot of textbooks like to use the good analogy of darts when explaining the difference between accuracy and precision, which we'll get to in a minute. So the throwing of a dart is analogous to the taking of a measurement. And if you think of the center of the dartboard, the bullseye, as being the truth, the real value. And the throwing of the dart is the taking of a measurement. The distance away from the center you are determines how accurate it is, right? Right on center, very accurate. If you miss the board, completely hit the wall, still a measurement, but it has low accuracy. Accuracy, it makes sense in accuracy terms to consider one measurement. Each individual measurement has an accuracy associated with it. Precision's a little bit different. Precision has to do with repeatability. And so it doesn't make sense really to talk about one measurement. It makes sense to talk about repeated measurements using the same instrument. So if you get on your bathroom scale, to use that as an example again, six times within a minute, probably your mass hasn't changed much in that 1 minute, and you get six drastically different measurements for your weight, then that is a low precision instrument. But if it gives you the same measurement in all six, it's high precision. In the dartboard analogy, if you throw a set of darts, that's like taking multiple measurements. If you get a tight grouping, that's analogous to high precision. If they're all over the place, low precision. Notice, by the way, that you can have high precision and low accuracy. If you throw a nice tight group on the wall, none of them is close to the truth, but they're close to each other. So that's high precision, low accuracy. And as a matter of fact, you could throw wildly, have three that are not close to each other, but if you take the average of all of them, it will be right on the bullseye. That would be low precision and high accuracy, which is rare. But obviously in science, you want an instrument that has both high accuracy and high precision. That's the goal. But that's the difference between those two. The third one is resolution. And I mentioned resolution when I was talking about significant figures a little earlier. Resolution is the noun form of the verb resolve. To resolve means to discriminate. Well, what does discriminate mean? Discriminate means to be able to tell apart. That's why we say, when we talk about discrimination socially, what we're doing is telling apart two groups when really we shouldn't be considering them differently. But discrimination, just as an easy example, you can think of using a mark on a wall, or two marks on a wall. If you put two black marks on a wall, and you stand close enough to those marks, you're able to discriminate them. In other words, you're able to recognize that it's two different marks. Another way of saying that is you're able to resolve them. Resolve is the noun, the verb form of resolution. Okay? If you stand back farther and farther, eventually there will be a distance at which, to your eyes, it will look like one mark, because your eyes will no longer be able to resolve them. It looks like one pixel to you, when really it's two. Okay? So, in terms of measurements, resolution is corresponds to significant figures. That's the difference between 3 grams and 3.0 grams. 3.0 grams tells you that you were able to resolve to a tenth of a gram. You're able to tell the difference between 0.1 and 0.2 grams. That's why you're justified in that second significant figure. But if all you can tell is roughly the difference between 1 and 2 grams, then you can't say 3.0, right? You can only go to the nearest whole number of grams. That's lower resolution. Using bathroom scale as yet another example to explain this, if you get on the scale and you tell me your weight, It'll be whatever the scale spits out, right? Now, I could say, now stay on the scale. I'm going to hand you this postage stamp. And now I want you to tell me the combined weight of you and the stamp. Well, with a conventional scale, the number's not going to change, right? That's because that instrument doesn't have enough resolution to tell the difference between zero and the weight of a stamp. So it gives you the same answer, your weight alone. You see what I mean? But if you go to a scale that has very high resolution, that stamp by itself will be a measurable, resolvable distance. I mean, value. Everyone good on all that? Then are you satisfied for the day? Okay, well, I am too, but practice so that you know this stuff better than you do right now. It's natural for you to not know this right now. I just told you it. But in a week, know it better. And use the recordings to do that. Okay. I'll see you Thursday.